Today on Changing Course, we're talking with Katie Condon. She just received quite an honor. One of her poems was featured in The New Yorker, and not only that, she read it, and you can hear it on The New Yorker. That actually sounds kind of weird to say you can hear a poem on The New Yorker, but you can. Katie, thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much for having me.
Tell me how this happened. Did you accidentally, you know, send them a poem and they printed it, or you knew the editor from elementary school?
No, neither of those things, although both would be great. I've been writing seriously for the better part of 10 years, and I submitted my work to The New Yorker for the first time in 2013 and had continued to submit it pretty consistently thereafter. And I submitted my work this time around just like I had every year for the past 5 years. The only difference was instead of getting an email that was politely rejecting my poems, this time Kevin Young, the poetry editor, emailed me and said he wanted to pick up Origin to print. And it was totally crazy that one of my poems made it out of the many thousands of submissions that they get every year. And it's an honor that I'll totally cherish for the rest of my career. But I guess the short answer is I got a poem in there by being persistent and working really hard, and I'm really excited about it.
And also by writing a really great poem.
Yes, and also that, yeah.
No, it is a really great poem.
Thank you.
And at the end of the interview, I'll point listeners on where to find it. Now, you've submitted a lot of poems to The New Yorker, and this is the one that got through, you know, the little maggot that sort of made its way in, so to speak. There's a reason I said that. You'll have to read the poem or listen to it. But when you sent that one in, did you think, this is the one that's going to make it, or I bet this one has a better chance?
I wasn't expecting Origin necessarily to be the one to get picked from that submission. If you asked me before it was accepted, I maybe would have chose a different poem. And in part, that's because Origin is different than the poems I typically write. It's driven by metaphor. It's very lyrical. You might even call it a persona poem. And typically, my poems have an identifiable speaker. They sort of draw on experiences from my own life. I am not a maggot. I know people can't see me on the radio, but I am a human being. Jokes aside, I was always confident in this poem, but I hadn't sent it out a lot because it was so different. And I was really surprised and obviously very pleased when Kevin Young grabbed it for The New Yorker.
When you were writing the poem itself, I mean, do you remember where you were or what kind of space you were in mentally or physically?
Yeah, I do, actually. I was in my office at my house. I felt like I had fallen into a sort of pattern of things that I had been writing about. I wasn't happy with any of the drafts. I was sort of in the middle of working on this poetry collection that I was beginning to see the major themes of, and maybe even a narrative thread that was going through it. And instead of just letting my imagination drive a poem when I would sit down to write, I was thinking too much about how to write a poem for this book. And so when I started to write Origin, I gave myself a project, which was just to go back to how I typically start poems and just free write and sort of let my imagination drive me instead of my idea of what all of the poems I should write from now on should be. So I just sat down, and the first image that came to my head was this dead mourning dove, and I just went with it. And I revised it for about a year before I felt good about it.
Wow. Revised it for a year.
I sure did, yeah.
Is that typical for you?
Definitely typical, yeah. There are some poems that I have stored away in my computer that I started 5 years ago that I still really like, but they're just not there yet, and I'll tinker with them until I feel good about them, and Origin was no different, yeah.
Do you always write on the computer, or do you ever handwrite poems or type, or, you know?
It sort of depends. I go back and forth between handwriting a draft a couple of times in a notebook and just staying straight on the computer. Whenever I sort of hit a lull, like I described before, I'll switch mediums. Recently, I've been writing drafts by hand, but I wouldn't be surprised if I go back to a computer in the next couple of months.
I tried to write something by hand recently and just, you know, just a note to a postcard, actually. I was on vacation, and I was just disgusted by how bad my handwriting.
Oh, no.
I'd forgotten how to use my hands.
Oh no.
Does poetry look different to you when you write it by hand?
For sure. Yeah. It forces my brain to move a lot more slowly than it does when I write on the computer, which is just a different exercise. I wouldn't say it's better or worse. That one's better or worse. I tend to stop myself in the middle of a draft if I'm handwriting and just start again from the beginning and sort of weed out things that I don't like. And what I find when I do that is images change or become more refined. I can catch on to melodies that I might not have caught on to when I was writing more quickly on a computer. The poems that I handwrite do tend to be shorter, though, than the ones I write on a computer because I'm forcing my brain to move more slowly.
How do you know when a poem is done? If you're working on it for a year, how do you know when it's finished?
That's a really good question. There is a famous quote by someone whose name I can't remember, who said a poem is never finished. It's just like ditched or something. I'm sort of summarizing it in a crass way. And I identify with that idea a lot. When I submitted Origin to The New Yorker, for example, between the time that I submitted it and it was accepted, I had sort of fiddled with it a little bit, like mostly just the line breaks. No major images were changed. But that's a long way of saying, for me, I don't think they're ever finished. I know that a lot of poets will publish a poem in a magazine and then they'll have a book come out and they'll have to have a little note at the end of the book that says, these poems appeared in the following journals, sometimes in different forms. So I'm not alone in this. There are poets who will revise even after something was published. We're manic. We never stop.
Well, yeah, I read where Bob Dylan actually, the song Tangled Up in Blue, it was a hit, you know, in its completed form. And he changed the lyrics like 15 years later because he was never really completely happy with it. And I was like, wow.
I never knew that. That's amazing.
It makes me feel better just in general. Like, okay, you know, life, you just never really quite tweak it exactly right for very long.
Right.
What are the reactions you've been getting from having your poem published? Are you hearing from people that you haven't heard from in a while, or?
It's been pretty overwhelming, actually. A lot of people who I'm close with and love have obviously reached out, but also people who I haven't spoken to in a long time. A woman emailed me the other day and said, "You have no reason to remember me, but we were at a conference together 5 years ago and I read this poem and assumed it had to be you. You know, I enjoyed it, which is really touching and exciting. And also what's perhaps as exciting as that is I've been noticing a lot of people who haven't read my work before are reading it now. And that's one awesome thing about social media. You can sort of track your audience and see your reach. And on Twitter and Facebook, I've noticed some names that I have never seen before sharing the poem, commenting on links that people have shared. It's been incredibly overwhelming. The enthusiastic response is really cool.
You know, it's something I find kind of interesting. I mean, it kind of happened to me too, in a sense. You know, I read it somewhere that, a UT PhD student had a poem in The New Yorker. I was like, well, I'll go read that. I have to be honest, you know, sometimes someone might say, here's a book of poetry from Knoxville. But I have to admit, you know, like, The New Yorker, well, that's something. And then I went through, and even before, you know, decided to do the story, I went through and just started reading your poetry, which I might not have done otherwise, you know, and it's like, wow, this great thing has been here all along.
Thank you so much for saying that and for reading my other work. That's like all I could hope for and more. Yeah.
Well, that's you know, it's like getting your single on the radio. You know, people go back and buy the old records and
right.
Say, oh, who is this Dylan kid?
Right.
Who keeps changing his lyrics?
Right.
Now, you're a PhD student in literature and creative writing at the University of Tennessee.
Yes.
How much longer do you have left on that?
I'm set to graduate this spring, actually, which is very exciting.
All right. And if that were not enough, you also do other things. Can you tell me about some of the other projects you're working on, like Grist and The Only Ten I See?
For sure. So I am one of the poetry editors for Grist, a journal of the literary arts, with Allison Patini Davis, another wonderful poet who's at UT. Grist is obviously the literary journal that's published by the English department. It's entirely graduate student run. We have a national presence. Our issue 10, which was our 10th anniversary issue, won a couple of awards. And I'm really excited to be working on that journal. We're publishing a lot of really exciting poetry. This issue is going to feature an interview with a UT professor and really outstanding poet, Joy Harjo. And we're really excited about it. We're really excited about the issue.
I love Joy Harjo.
She's amazing. Her work is amazing. Her teaching style is amazing. She's just a bright light.
Tell me something about The Only 10 I See. I notice you have events coming up.
Yes, we do. The Only 10 I See is a series that I run with another UT PhD candidate, Jeremy Reed. It's not affiliated with the university. Instead, we sort of try to reach out to Knoxville community members who are interested in poetry, invite them to a series of readings that happen on the third Thursday of every month during the academic year. Our readings are at Pretentious Brewery in Old City. And our first reading is on September 20th. We have some really amazing poets coming in. Justin Baining, Devin Walker Figueroa, and Wayne Miller will be here. And Knoxville, if you're interested in coming, it starts at 8 p.m.
And if you want to find out more about Katie's poetry and things she's involved in, there's a website, katiecondonpoetry.com. It's just amazing how available poetry is now, and not just as a reader, but as a writer. How do you feel about that? Because I noticed you have a lot of things published in a lot of different places on a lot of different websites.
The internet is amazing for poets, especially poets who don't have a book yet, like myself. I'm shopping around a book, cross your fingers, see what happens. But in the meantime, my website is a place, an iteration of a book, kind of, where people can read all of my poems in one place. And it feels really lucky to be writing in this age of availability. Poetry's so accessible. It's really cool, for example, that The New Yorker has recordings of poems too, because maybe people who haven't enjoyed reading poetry in the past will enjoy listening to it at least. They'll be able to access the tonal variations more easily. All of which is to say, internet, two thumbs up from me.
Yeah, and that's kind of an interesting point that you mentioned, because I read your poem first and I read it a couple of times and then I said, oh, you can listen to it. And that was a whole different experience. I got something different out of it from listening to it. I mean, it really is truly different. So that brings me to my next question. Would you read something for us?
I would love to read a poem. And I will read a poem that is called Practicing Digressions. I am eager to grow old. What a joy it will be to bear love down on whatever daughters I force into this sometimes lovely world. Preaching similar things, I bet, that my mother preached to me, like, you are a woman, praise yourself. What a light her scriptures are on this morning that is gray and cool as the last lake on the mountain before it gives itself up to the sky. I meant to be telling you about age. Not my mother who is aging, not mountains or mornings or the unforgivably expansive sky. I admit, it will be difficult not to mention the robin on the wire, the light lifting itself up over my lover's slender body, which he lives in more confidently than I have witnessed of myself. I'm practicing digressions on you, so that I can prepare for the ways my memory will loosen itself from around itself, uncoiling like the threads in the ice skating penguin sweater I'll love when I'm 80 and never want to take off, even as summer's weight bears down like my mother bore down on me. My mother, whose voice is familiar in this poem, though years will have bounded by since I heard her sing. Where was I? Mountains steep as memory, water, morning, light. My lover's body stirring, his hands trembling after thousands of mornings exploring every new wrinkle on my breast. Have I spoken of birds? How they stay on longer into the cold than they should, and for what? To learn how to forage for food that is not there. To harvest something finally of absence, that they will keep with them when they decide to flit off into the thick mist of late fall, that, when I was young, I wanted to walk through, believing I would make myself a ghost.
Our guest again on Changing Course is Katie Condon, and you can hear or read her new poem in the latest edition of The New Yorker. For Changing Course, which is a production of WUOT, I'm Todd Steed.